Okay, welcome to Books, Bullets, and Bad Omens, Alexander Mantzos.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Tell us who you are.
Okay, so I'm a Finnish freelance video game journalist. I've been writing about games since like the end of 2009, maybe. So mainly for this Finnish magazine Pelit, which is the biggest video game publication in Finland, but for different publications too. And now in the spring, I published a book about it's kind of overview of the history of video games.
There's a million things to write about. Why games?
I think they're a very interesting cultural like phenomenon right now because they're still new and there's lots of stuff happening and there's not enough people like maybe covering it in depth, at least in Finland. So I think that's if you start writing about movies or say music, there's such a big tradition, so much stuff and so many people. But with games, it's just something. It kind of feels fresh, let's say. Like that.
Do Finns play a lot of games? Is this a gamer nation?
I would say so, yes.
What games do Finns play?
It's kind of hard to say. I think in Finland and in the world, these are very diverse. Like, how can I say this? There's lots of groups of gamers. Some are into like short single-player games. Others play like MOBAs, so like Dota or League of Legends for like, I don't know, 30 hours a week or something, and they only play one game. Some like stream only one game or something. So it's really hard to say because there's so many games to choose from.
Okay, is there like a? I guess there's such a thing as national psychology. We're a little bit different from Russians. We're a little bit different from Swedes and so on. What do the games that Finns play say about us, or do they say anything about us as a nation?
I think that's a cool observation, but. I'm not sure how I would answer that because I think we play mostly the same games as everyone else because nowadays we are like we live in a global world and the games that we discuss and play, we all do together on the internet. So it kind of mixes things together.
Okay. So in this regard, even Finns live in a global world.
I would say so, yes.
Okay, even though we're kind of isolated in some other ways. Now, one of the things that... when you talk about games and video games, and particularly video game analysis and journalism about video games, one of the things that you oftentimes hear from other people is, it's just games, dude. You know, you just pick up the whatever you call it, the ohjain.
The gamepad.
Gamepad.
Controller.
Yeah. Yeah. And you play for a couple of hours, and then you go do something interesting, something different, something meaningful. Is there something meaningful about games? This is one of the things you write about in your book.
I would say there is a lot of things meaningful about games, but as with every media, with everything, there's like very pretty dumb games and pretty cool games and stuff and everything in between. But I think also that's kind of a notion that's going to die out like slowly but surely as new generations who have grown up with gaming, like, they find gaming natural. So it's not a thing that, you know, when we watch movies, we don't ask like, why do you watch movies? What's so meaningful about movies? Like, people watch crap on Netflix and nobody asks like, why you're watching movies? So it's it's just something that we have to like grow up out of.
Your book is kind of an interesting phenomenological approach to games. You know, you write a lot about how the game system and the game AI, the artificial intelligence of the game, and the human mind kind of converge to form something meaningful. Can you open this theme up a little bit for us?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that because I wanted to write a book. So it's kind of a short summary of, you could say, video game history. But oftentimes, at least in Finland, when we write about games in like... let's say like newspapers and stuff, it's all about the sales figures or all about the like, hey, this guy is an esports star or whatever. Yeah. So I wanted to talk about the experience of playing the games, and that's the meaningful part. Like say, like if you're playing, you play this, I don't know, like you play StarCraft a lot. Yeah. So what's interesting about that? It's about the systems, the mechanical stuff, or hey, you like adventure games. What's interesting about adventure games? Yeah. It's the plotting and stuff and how that happens. So I wanted to really focus on the experience stuff because I think that's, we talk too little about that. And that's the whole thing about games. It's an experience. It's not about the sales.
Yeah, exactly. And controversy, of course, when it comes to Grand Theft Auto or something.
Yeah.
In order to be written about, the game has to be super violent or sexist or racist or something like that.
Yeah, so we only pick the examples that are really like on the other extreme. So we don't usually like see headlines with, hey, this game is really cute. Yeah. It's like, it's for all ages. It's really cool. We don't have those headlines.
In terms of the games that are available now, what do you think is the most interesting psychologically? And in terms of game analysis, is there one that's particularly interesting for you?
Psychologically, I think I've had this answer for maybe a couple of years now. There's this game that I really like. It's called The Witness. It came last year. It's like it's kind of a puzzle game. You're on an island and you solve these kind of riddles or these puzzles. But it's about like when you start solving the puzzles and you just think it's like doing like a Sudoku or something. But then you realize that the game is about the thinking process of solving the puzzle and how we view the world and stuff. But it's really hard to explain and I don't want to spoil it, but it's just something that you start and you think that you have this conception that it's just a game, it's just a puzzle game, and then it just goes beyond that.
Yeah. Where did games in the form that we play them now, of course, you know, probably, you know, the pre-men or whatever you call them, pre-humans played some sort of a dice game or something, but in terms of the electronic games that we play now, where do you trace the beginning of this phenomenon?
Well, in my book, I started with the 70s, the start of 70s with Pong, which was published in 1972, and it was like a coin-op game, so you could go into a bar and play it, like put a coin into it and play it for a while. But before that, like say, I'm actually not that's into the really prehistoric era of video games, but I think it's like 50s and 60s something. We had computers in the universities, and people were doing stuff there that they were playing like internally. Like there's the student, he's making something, and he's inviting a friend to come over, and then they play together, and they maybe send it to another university. So the experiments began there, and the first games are there. But the first commercial games, you could say, began in the early 70s in the coin arcades.
Okay, what were these games like? Fairly basic, I assume.
Well, the really famous example is called Space War. It's from the 60s, but I don't remember the exact year now. But it's like, if you know the game Asteroids, which is exactly that. So it's like a physics-based like action shooter. So I guess you could say that. I think we had like shooter games and then like this text adventure games maybe. So I think the seeds of the genres that we have now were there.
Okay. And because my channel and this blog deal with this sort of less happy subjects of life, at what point do you think fear as a feeling started to seep into video games? When did distributors realize that there's a market for scary games?
Yeah, I think it began in the 80s because we have like began to see like Lovecraft inspired text adventure games, and then there were even on like on 8-bit consoles there were some kind of horror games. But for me, at least from the perspective of this modern of this day, they seem kind of maybe a little bit too crude. Like it's hard to, they're so primitive today's standards. But for if you'd ask, like for me, it all begins in the early 90s with the game Alone in the Dark, which came out in 1992, which is a really famous game. And I think that's kind of laid the foundations for a very long time, at least the whole 90s. So it's a game about being kind of going into a mansion. It's set into like this 1920s, maybe something. And it has this Edgar Allan Poe and H.P. Lovecraft influences too. But the point is that you're trapped in these huge mansions and there's this like puzzles and monsters awaiting you there, and you feel really like disempowered. Like usually games are about, well not usually, but many games, at least action games, they're about this power fantasy that you're this really cool dude and you go blow up everything. And it's about taking the control away from you, and you're stuck in the mansion and you can't even control the character properly, and the camera angles are really strange, and it's you die all the time, and you're like feel really trapped and like alone, alone in the dark. So I think it all began there for the modern horror, and from that we get like series like Resident Evil and Silent Hill, which are pretty famous even now.
Yeah. So you talked about the feeling of disempowerment, taking away the controls from the player. How does this setting, this type of an idea, create a hit game? Why does somebody want to subject themselves to the feeling of being disempowered and being, alone in the dark?
That is a very good question, and it's a bit difficult to answer, because we could ask this same thing about, let's say, horror movies or about like, I think it's something really, really, really primitive in the human mind or somewhere that we are afraid of many things, afraid of darkness, afraid of like the future and stuff. So it's kind of, so I think you should ask like a psychologist or something to unravel the thing. Why would we want to experience that in our free time of our own volition? But maybe it's about like games are, they can be really scary, but ultimately they are pretty safe environments. Yeah. You can quit the game anytime you want to. You can check a guide. You can maybe even use cheat codes, even though nowadays we don't really have cheat codes. But like in older games, so it's maybe maybe about testing yourself or something. So you could, you wouldn't want to be in that mansion like in real life, but you can. It's a pretty intense experience also. So I think with horror, it's about. You kind of feel it in your whole body, the horror experience, not something intellectual. So maybe it's something to do with that.
So this came out in 1992.
Yes.
And when did Doom come out?
Doom came out in 93. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Is there like, are they similar somehow, these games?
I think Doom is a good example because it's this really 100% action game.
Yeah.
And really like this maybe... It's kind of the foundation of this like badass dude action games, but you have horror elements there too. So it's also about like you could be blasting the monsters and stuff, but then you're low on ammo, and then there's also darkness and all the sounds, and then you're trapped too, and there's like lots of monsters coming in or something, and you're alone in that game too. So it's maybe about, let's say, Alone in the Dark is 100% horror, and then Doom is like mostly about the action, but there's also horror. So maybe it's kind of. Yeah, because in the early 90s, you get that's the beginnings of the maybe modern video game horror experience with Doom too.
In your book, in your article about Doom, you write about how, I thought this was an interesting observation, you wrote about how Doom is about trying to control chaos or trying to sort of introduce structure to a non-structured world where things just fly at you and you only have the shotgun. Can you elaborate a little bit on this?
Yeah, I think Doom is a cool example because it created kind of the first person shooter genre. But if you look at the FPS games now, like say Call of Duty or something else, it's mainly about like taking cover and like really like aiming and stuff and being kind of realistic. But Doom is not realistic at all. It's about like this. It's really fast and you have to like, I used something, an expression, something like you have to dance around the monsters. So it's kind of. You are in the middle of the battlefield. You're not just like behind a cover and then like watching out for the bad guy to come out. You're in the middle of it all, and maybe that also adds to the horror aspect. You can't. There are no like safe environments. You are in the middle of it.
Yeah, I remember when I played Doom for the first time. Before that, I'm sure there were bloody games before it, but it was my first exposure as a sort of a normal suburban kid. To games where there was blood everywhere, and the person, I remember there's like an avatar of the Space Marine, and his eyes start to bleed.
Yes.
He comes slowly to. I imagine this caused a bit of a controversy when it was released.
Yeah, it caused a pretty big controversy. I think actually there was some kind of controversy in the 80s. I don't remember quite now, but the controversy in the mid-90s was the really big one about the video game violence. And there were like a couple of games, like Doom was a big one, and then Mortal Kombat with the, like, you had a fighting game with lots of blood flowing out, and then you could do this finishing move, like ripping someone's spine out of them or something, like really, really gruesome. And some other games. So that was a huge debate at the time. But then slowly kind of, and I think the age restriction actually came out of that. So things changed somewhat. So,
The guy who developed it is a bit of a legend nowadays, John Romero.
Yes.
How did he come up with the idea? How was Doom developed? Do you have any background info on this?
I think it grew organically out of the Doom was developed by id Software, where John Romero was one of the primary designers. And the game that they did before Doom was Wolfenstein 3D, which was also kind of a primitive first-person shooter. Yeah. You were shooting like Nazis in the Second World War. So I think Doom grew out of that, and then Wolfenstein grew out of, like, because at id you had John Romero, who like did a lot of design stuff, and then you had John Carmack, who did a lot of the technology stuff, and he wanted to do, he wanted to develop the 3D side of games, which are which were really, really limited at the time. So he was into the technology, and then they came up with the 3D stuff, and then Wolfenstein came along, and they realized, hey, it's pretty fun to shoot like bad guys in the 3D environment. It's pretty easy to do, and I think that grew. Doom was a like a logical progression.
I might be wrong, but I would assume that Doom would have been the first game that started this discussion about real-life violence being evoked by video game violence. Am I right or wrong?
I think you are right. I think there was even like we had the Columbine shootings around that time, and there was actually, I don't remember right now, but there was maybe, I think this was one of the persons involved in the shooting. He made like his own Doom levels or something.
That's right, Eric Harris.
Yeah, and that was a like a point of debate too, which kind of disturbing, but it's but we have to also keep in mind that like everybody was playing Doom at the time, so it was like,
Well, do you think that there's a correlation, even if there isn't a direct correlation? You know, that anybody who plays Doom is a murderer, but the people who have a sort of predisposition to or a sort of their wiring is in their heads, it's in a way where they're, you know, violently inclined, and they're inclined to carry out a school shooting or something. Do you think that games play into creating that mindset where it becomes possible to just shoot a person the way you shoot a monster on the screen? Is there any correlation there?
Well, I don't think I'm kind of qualified to answer that question in terms of like psychology and science, but I think there's like like if you're like pretty normal person, it's hard to say who is normal, but like relatively sane, it's not going to do any harm for you when you understand it's just a game and what's happening and stuff. Like if you have like some kind of problems already, I guess that playing a video game might intensify that, but it's like, but we still shouldn't like, how to say this? Maybe we should concentrate more on finding and helping these people instead of like banning games or something. But exactly. I think it's a discussion worth having.
Yeah.
But it's also like, I actually just found there's a, like a new book that came out like maybe this year or last year called Moral Combat, and it's about this like video game violence, and I think it's like a, their finding is that there is no correlation, but I have yet to read it. So.
Okay. Yeah, it's for me, remembering back and thinking back on playing Doom, it was a great release. You know, it's like it came out when Finland was in a recession and there wasn't really a lot of prospects for the future. So for me, I remember just like shooting these aliens and these zombies. It was cathartic. You know, you released something from inside you and you felt a little bit more calm afterwards.
Yeah, I think that's a common experience too. So I think some people may like get really intense. Well, you get intense during the game, but they can be like intense after the game. But I maybe if I play, go back and play Doom, the experience is really intense. But after that, I'm kind of more like, well, yeah, maybe like kind of relieved or something. I'm kind of tired but happy or some way. Yeah, I'm just kind of maybe like feel like doing something completely. It's like. Like going for a walk or something and not feeling violent at all.
Yeah, that's right. So Doom 1993, and what was the next great step in horror games?
I would say Resident Evil is a kind of very important one. I think that came out in 1996.
Yeah.
And it was, I talked about Alone in the Dark, and Resident Evil is kind of maybe like what Doom was to Wolfenstein, Resident Evil is the same for Alone in the Dark. It's a very, very, very similar kind of setting. It's like being trapped in this mansion again with like monsters. It's maybe more influenced not by Lovecraft and Poe, but like George Romero's the zombie movies and stuff. So it's more like maybe American style and more like action style. But it's very, very similar too. But there we had like more graphical fidelity because it was done for a PlayStation, which had better 3D capabilities. So it was kind of more real, let's say that. But the same idea updated, but it played with the same tricks and it was very, very successful. And I think it's a pretty cool game even now.
Yeah, I remember playing it with my friend. He had a PlayStation, and the characters were somehow more, the way they moved, the way they aimed the guns and so on. There was something more. They somehow, the producers of the game had clearly understood something about how the human body works, how it moves, and so on. I remember this aspect of the game extremely well.
Yeah, I think one thing that's very often mention when talking about these early survival horror games is that the person, the protagonist of the game, like in Resident Evil, you're playing like this police soldier kind of person, but they're not like superhuman. They're not the Doom guy. They're like you. They're kind of slow and methodical. They have to aim, and then they, when a zombie attacks, they feel pain and they start to limp or something. They feel kind of vulnerable too. It's it's about, again, if Doom is more about like super empowerment with bits of horror, and Resident Evil goes back to the being haunted.
Yeah, and Resident Evil, one of the things I remember is that, that in Doom, they were clearly the people that you were shooting. They were, or the characters you were shooting, you know, with the exception of that green-haired guy who was clearly a human, but mostly they were these like floating entities and ghosts.
Well, they looked like demons, or
Right. But in Resident Evil, you the zombies clearly had been human at some point. This was captured really well.
Yes, and I think that adds to the. It feels kind of how can I say this? It feels maybe more like nasty or like terrifying or not not so like. It's not very nice to be shooting people who have, even if they have been turned into zombies. Like, this is a like common zombie trope in all the movies. It's like when you see the first zombie, you're like, I can't kill that guy. He's a human being. But I think there's something captured in the Resident Evil.
Yeah. As a game analyst, it's interesting to ask you this question. There's zombies everywhere. There's games, Walking Dead, the TV show. There's a fucking zombie walk. Where the people, you know that happening where people dress up as zombies and they wander through the streets. You've never heard of this?
I don't think so, but okay. But I completely understand that this is a thing.
What is it? What is it? Why are we obsessed with zombies? Why are they so popular, if you want to put it that way?
I think that's a good question because personally, I'm very tired of zombies. I think that's we need a huge break from zombies. Yeah. I think it's kind of, it's of course, there's like this aspect of it's, like zombie is a human but a non-human at the same time, so that's kind of weird.
Yeah,
and it's and it adds to the, like in Doom you had these demons, it was okay to kill them, but with zombies you don't really want to, you just want them to stay away, you just want them to disappear. There's these aspects, but I think that zombies have become a really like easy way. Everybody knows what a zombie is, so if you're doing like a zombie movie and you just say like, hey, this is a zombie movie, and everybody knows, aha, I know what this is. So if you're like, I'm doing this movie with this strange creature that is part this and part that, and everybody is like, I don't know, I don't want to see this. So I think it just has become this huge pop culture trope and cliche, and but I hope we'll get over that.
One of the things I recognize in myself when I play sometimes these zombie games, my wife is more into them and she has these games, so sometimes I play them and I realize that, for example, if I'm playing Grand Theft Auto and I'm about to shoot a person, it's hard to pull the trigger, but when it's zombies, it's a little bit easier, even though it's
yeah.
It's like, is it just an excuse to see people die and getting killed? Well, they're zombies, you know, they're no longer humans. Let's kill them.
I don't know if it's an excuse, but I think it's a better use of, like, if you're making a violent game, I think you have some kind of responsibility of making it kind of, at least somewhat like morally responsible in a way, because I don't really, I don't want to play Grand Theft Auto games anymore. I think they're kind of cruel and kind of, I don't know, I just, I don't like them. But with like zombies or, well, Doom is the really good example, because in that it's like, it's really abstract and really like this, like these are just some like pixelated demons, whatever. So with zombies, it's kind of a, there's more of an excuse. Well, yeah, as you put it, like there's a more, the better reason maybe. Or like using the violence. And I have to say that in Alone in the Dark, you actually had, if you came up with the solutions, you could avoid a lot of the combat in the game. And in Resident Evil, it actually encourages you to also run past a lot of the zombies because you have so little ammunition and stuff.
Yeah.
So it kind of encourages to not just like going out on a shooting spree. So there's that too.
Yeah. What are the, let's say, let's take the example of Resident Evil. What's the overall narrative of the game? What does the game, how does it sort of define A and B? Where do you start and where do you end? What's the overall story of the game?
Of the original game or the series or the...
Is there a narrative to the whole series?
There's like a huge, like lots of like background stuff and the plots are connected, but I'm not really huge into the Resident Evil plot because it's like a B movie, crap. So I'm not in there in for the plot. I'm like satisfied, like there's like a bad like corporation and stuff, it's has caused a zombie outbreak. And I think that's kind of, you don't need anymore. It's about the physical sensation of like being in the mansion and like being trapped. Like for me, that's the appeal. Like whenever the plot stuff comes up, it's like, just... And it's actually has become like a joke or like a meme with Resident Evil having a really bad dialogue and voice acting and all the story beats being like funny because they're so bad. So I think the plot is not actually so important to horror games as in some other games. But of course it helps if you have a good plot, but you don't need it all the time.
Okay. So moving from Resident Evil and 1996, when Eurotechno was playing and people were hanging up Backstreet Boys posters on their walls, certainly I was. What's the next step in horror development?
Okay, I would go to the Silent Hill 2, which was released in 2001 for the PlayStation 2. And which is for me, it really continues the tradition of Alone in the Dark and Resident Evil, but it's also kind of an end of an era. And I think that's the Silent Hill 2 is the culmination of the stuff that was done in the 90s. So it's a pretty similar game in that you're like this disempowered person and you're like in a town full of monsters and stuff, and you have to solve puzzles and manage your weapons and stuff, and it's scary and all. But it's a very psychological story. And it's about like this unreliable narrator. So. Yeah. Okay, maybe I'll spoil just a little, because it's like you start playing with this normal dude who's looking for his wife, and then as the story goes on, you realize that he's not a really good person, and it's the game is about going through his like emotional states. It's like a purgatory or something. It's like a hell, personal hell for him, the game. So I think that's Silent Hill 2 really well blends the mechanical, the game systems with the theme and story. So I think that's a really huge success.
Yeah, I remember Silent Hill, doesn't it kick off when the guy receives a letter from his wife and says, come to Silent Hill?
Or the wife's been dead for some time.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
What's the you mentioned that this guy is sort of, we slowly learn that he's not a good person. How is this made to happen in a video game? I can understand in a novel, you know, we learn a little bit here, but how do they make this happen in such a personal journey of learning about him? How do they actually pull this off in a game?
Yeah, I think there's two parts to it. I think one part is that the protagonist himself, I think it's called James or something, he's kind of repressing the stuff. Yes. So he doesn't want to remember, and he's kind of buried the memory. Yeah. So he's not like, he doesn't understand it himself that well. And the second thing is that we get this you could say like little hints that you realize on the second or third playthrough, but not on the first. And there's like these omissions, like there's like he could be talking about his wife and not mention some aspects, like and we don't know that he has like skipped it. So it's kind of, but it's a really cool like build up, so you feel that something is really strange from the beginning. Like he's getting a letter from his dead wife. What is he doing here? That's a warning sign. So there's like this small warning sign and hints and omissions. So.
Yeah. One of the most famous aspects of the Silent Hill game is the final boss, the Pyramid Head. Was he in the first one already?
He was not in the first one. He was introduced in the second one.
Yeah.
And he's not like a final boss, but he's like a really like recurring character. Mm. He's there all the time, and he's like this kind of representing your guilt or stuff. So and he's this presence and really terrifying design.
Silent Hill was also, like you mentioned, there was a sort of personal, you know, it wasn't a team of army guys going against zombies, you know, kill those zombies, yes sir, but there was a rather a humane aspect to it, a sense of journey and discovery. Was this, had this been done before in other games, in other genres?
I think that's kind of a common plot point of many horror like stories, that there's this like really regular like guy or gal who is kind of ends up in this weird situation. You could say like, I don't know, like Evil Dead, like there's like teenagers coming to spend a weekend and stuff happens. So I think that's kind of part of the tradition.
Yeah.
But I think in gaming, it's kind of like in Alone in the Dark, you had this ordinary people, but they kind of went to this mansion to investigate stuff. Yeah. So that kind of explains it. But with Silent Hill, it's more about this like really the personal problems of this protagonist becomes the environment. Mm. So that's what's kind of very unique.
Okay, that's very interesting. What was I about to ask? So after... no, actually, let's stay on Silent Hill for just a bit more. The game has a phenomenal soundtrack. There's some music to it. That's I have the soundtrack on my MP3 player. I don't need the game either. It's creepy.
I actually listen to it quite often. I like this really, really horrifying tracks, and then there's this really peaceful, like maybe kind of like trip hop or something, like these beats, which are really like, but they kind of amplify. It's kind of, they're beautiful and sad at the same time, and I think that kind of reflects the story too. Yeah. So the sound design and the music is a really, really important aspect of it.
Has the designer of Silent Hill done anything since then?
I actually don't know who the designer of Silent Hill 2 is, at least. I think there was like it wasn't a huge team that made Silent Hill 2. It was maybe like, I don't know, maybe like 15 people or something. Yeah. So I've read some interviews that they were like a pretty close group and they had this artistic vision like that they could. And I think that's kind of cool. We'll doing this kind of chronological story of the horror games, like in the Silent Hill 2 came out in 2001, and then it was possible to do a game with a small team. So that kind of changed during that time. Like we had like PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, and those games have like started to have really huge teams, and there was more money involved, and it was more difficult to make this kind of game, which was kind of a game that would sell, but would also be some kind of somehow artistic. So
they managed to strike that balance.
Yes,
in a way.
Yes, I would say so.
So after Silent Hill, we move on to.
I would pick up. I think this game. I think many have heard about Resident Evil Silent Hill, but the game I want to pick is called Pathologic. It's by this Russian studio called Ice Peak Lodge, and I think it was released in 2005. And not many people have played it, and for a good reason, because it's a pretty, I won't say it's a bad game, but it's a very difficult, it's a very demanding game to play. So it's this kind of, we talk about like, in Russia we have like Russian art movies and stuff, like Tarkovsky and stuff. So maybe Ice Peak Lodge is like the weird Russian art game studios. And Pathologic is about, you arrive into this town, which is, there's like a plague going on, and you're like a kind of a doctor figure. Well, there are different characters, but... And then you get stuck in the town. You can't get out. There's this outbreak, and then you have to start solving it. But it's really about, like, I think it's probably the most terrifying game that I have played, even if it doesn't really have that much combat or jump scares or monsters or stuff, but it's just, it's so claustrophobic. You're stuck in there, and your character moves really slow, and everything is, like, super bleak, and you just spend ages, like, walking from one part of town to another to... do something and then realize that you have failed. And the game, even if you fail in quests, the game still goes on. So for me, it was like piling failure on failure, and then the game ended like pretty weirdly in me, like not controlling the situation. So it's a completely different experience, because the games that we have talked about, they're very this tightly designed games and fun to play. Well, maybe not always fun to play, but kind of rewarding. But Pathologic is like, it's a really tiring and really like a, it wants you to suffer, I would say. Okay. So that's a kind of a, it's a completely like a new experience. And that's why it was also, kind of, it's a cult game.
So. Yeah. So I think a Russian game is kind of a wild card. You wouldn't expect games to come out of, well, I'm sure they do, but I didn't grow up with Russian games.
No.
So do you think that, is there something radically different about the way Russians make games as opposed to the Japanese or the Americans or so on?
I think if you look at the, like, say, let's say Russian and Eastern European games, because it's in the, like, in the, like, in the, I know, last 15 years maybe, we've seen, like, Stalker games from, coming from, I don't remember the studio, but from, I think they're doing in Ukraine, and there's Metro 2033 games, and The Witcher and stuff. There's some kind of flavor to them. Some kind of Eastern of this Russian Slavic. I don't know what to call it. I hope I'm not being racist or anything. There's some kind of a feeling to them. And I think with Pathologic, I think Ice Peak Lodge is maybe continuing this kind of, let's say, existential tradition of like Russian literature and stuff. Exactly. It's not psychological, because there's like supernatural elements in it. But there's some kind of like feeling that the everyday life is kind of messed up fundamentally, and that we can't control situations, and that somehow we have to, well, through suffering, we have to understand who we are.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of, it's not something that maybe an American gaming studio would do as their first game. So I think that's kind of maybe the thing.
Yeah, it's I played that game a little bit, and I also played the other games that you sent me. And the Russian and Eastern European games, they have a certain, like you said, a sort of existential soulfulness to them.
Mm.
Like I remember the first time I saw the film Stalker by Tarkovsky. It's one of my favorite movies ever.
Mine too, so.
Yeah, it's an absolute masterpiece. So I felt like there's a certain you know, philosophical edge to it that perhaps maybe is missing from other games.
Yeah, and it's kind of this like sad philosophical sadness. I don't know what to call it. Like some Slavic melancholy or something like that. So there's something about that, yes.
Yeah. So have these guys who made this game, have they made anything different, anything new?
Yeah, actually, all the games that they're doing, they're kind of a little different. So there's like this game called The Void, which is very surrealistic. I tried to play it, but I didn't understand anything about it. You were like floating in this kind of weird, trippy space environment, collecting some kind of colors. And I was like, okay, this seems really cool, but I don't understand anything of it. But they're actually remaking Pathologic at the moment. So it's coming, I think it should come maybe like next year or something. So it's the same game, but it's kind of updated and like, it's not like exact copy, but something reimagining, I think they're calling it. So I'm looking forward to it, even though I know that it will bring a lot of suffering to me.
Let's take a little sidestep from the horror chronology.
Yeah.
One of the things we see in the movie business now is remake after remake. Everything's being remade. Is the same thing plaguing the gaming industry?
Yeah, I think it began something. I think it's been strong maybe like in the last 10 years or something. Mm-hmm. But it's more, I think if we go a little bit back to horror, because in the, let's say about Resident Evil, the first Resident Evil game was remade in the like 2003 or something. Mm-hmm. And then it was a bit retouched and re-released again like a couple of years ago. But I actually think the remake is really like well made.
Yeah.
It's like the same game, but with, I actually think the, like more modern graphics are not always better than the old ones, but I think they capture the spirit of the original game. Yeah. And to me, it's like better. It has better atmosphere. Yeah. So I think that's a, when you do that kind of remake, you take a game that hasn't aged that well. That people don't want to play the original Resident Evil game nowadays that much. So I think they remade it pretty well. But then there's some games which are basically just, hey, we just have better textures and we release this as a game that you have to pay for again. So that's kind of, that's a bummer, but on the whole, I'm positive that the games are being kept alive, let's say like that. So and as long as you have the original available to you. And I think nowadays we have a pretty good situation with people being able to buy older games too and playing them. So I think it's not that bad like yet. So I think it's okay.
Okay. So moving on from the Russian, what was the name again?
Pathologic.
Pathologic, yeah. Yes. I remember the paraplegic.
I don't know that.
Moving on from there, where's our next stop?
I would say it's in 2009. And what we see the rise of the independent gaming development scene in the, like, say, 2007, 2008, somewhere like there. So people going back to having these small studios where they can work on something that they really enjoy.
Mm.
And we have this Swedish studio called Frictional. Maybe Frictional Games, and they released some like Penumbra games in the like 2000 mid 2000s, but the 2009 Amnesia: The Dark Descent, that was their kind of the defining game, I would say, and a very influential one. So it's kind of it's a first person game, so the Silent Hills and Resident Evils, you always are looking at the character on the screen, but in Amnesia you are in the game. It's very it's supposed to be very immersive. And it doesn't have any combat, which is kind of new thing also. So, but it has monsters and it has like danger, but it's about being like super disempowered. So you can't even, there's this like strange beings like around, but if you look at them too much, your character goes insane. So it's kind of, you have to stay in the, it's a very dark game too. So stay in the shadows and like creep like behind crates and stuff in this like medieval castle setting. So I think that's kind of, and it also caused a huge like internet and YouTube like thing, like people playing, recording them playing amnesia and screaming because they're so afraid. So I think that's kind of influenced a huge number of like indie horror games. Which, yeah, I think the important part is the immersiveness and the non-combat part.
So this clearly, this was successfully capturing something about what people are afraid of if people were screaming in the videos.
Yeah, I think it goes back to, like, we talked about the protagonist of the game being ordinary person. I think that goes even further, that you are not even able to, like, defend yourself. That's the kind of the ultimate ordinary person.
Yeah. It sounds to me sort of, I'm speculating here, but like the logic of a dream or something like that. Like, I have these kinds of nightmares where I'm helpless and I have to just dodge and get out and not look at something for long enough.
Yeah, I think it goes, like, let's say like Silent Hill and Resident Evil and Alone in the Dark, they play with the darkness aspect. But with amnesia, it's much stronger. Like, you're like, and the darkness is like very primitive fear, like in the everyday like experience and stuff. So I think that plays with like, you don't see the protagonist, you are in the game and you can't see very well. And even if you see the monsters, then you go insane. So it's kind of this chain that which is like very hard to break, but it's also very... very intense and very kind of, I don't know, it's something that you can only get in games, I think. It's you can't really capture that in horror movie, because in Amnesia, you know that there's this dark hallway and there's something there and you have to go there yourself.
Yeah. So. Another thing that I kind of detect and notice in myself is that things that would kind of bore me in a movie, they can be incredibly exciting in a game.
Yes, yes. And that's when I said that horror games don't necessarily need to have a good plot.
Yeah.
Like with Resident Evil, the plot is garbage, absolute garbage. But it doesn't matter because you are in the situation and the gaming systems create the story.
Yeah. So moving on from Amnesia, where do we stop next?
I guess we could continue like with another indie game.
Sure.
Yeah, and I think this is also a Swedish studio. I don't know, is this Scandinavian horror thing, but it's called... Actually, I think it's called maybe Simogo or something. I don't remember quite now. But the game is called Year Walk, and I think it was released in 2013. And it's kind of a, again, it's something pretty like different from what was in the 90s or something. Yeah. It's a mobile adventure game. You can also get it for a PC, but it was first made for, I think, like iPhones and iPads and stuff. Yeah. And it's based on Swedish folklore and mythology. So there's like this, you're going on this year walk, which is a tradition of like going... I think it's like going out during the middle of the night into the forest and stuff, and then you can like see the future unfolding or something. But there's also like this weird dangers because there's like this mythological creatures also there. Like there's like this, which are taken from the traditions. Yeah. So the developers haven't made them up. So there's like this dead baby spirits, and there's like this horse spirit that is living in the river and stuff. So it's kind of... I think it doesn't have like the survival aspect, so it's not scary in that sense, but it's very tense and it's very strange because there's this like, well, this mythological aspect that you realize that these have been like around, but you don't maybe know them unless you're Swedish. Like I'm not, so I don't. They were unfamiliar to me, but there's like this, there's something there.
Yeah, so combination of Swedish folklore and these folkloric tales made into a game. That sounds like something only the brilliant Swedes would come up with, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's really, really, really cool to not like use, like we talked about zombies, like Romero's zombie movies are classic, but maybe we could like delve into our own history as like if you're Swedish, check out the Swedish stuff. If you're Finnish, check out the Finnish stuff. Like everybody has their own like traditional stories. So maybe we could like recreate them in video games. I think that's a huge, like, there's huge potential there. So I'm really like, the Year Walk isn't the best or ambitious game ever, but it's pretty cool, and I like the folklore aspect of it.
Have Finnish studios done anything similar?
I don't think so. I hope I'm not wrong and failed to mention something. So I don't know if somebody's listening to this and knows a game that is about Finnish folk tales or something, then hit me up.
What, let's say you were paid to program a game about Finnish folklore, what would be the story? Who would be the antagonist of the game?
Well, actually, when I talked about this, that I would like to see more games based on folklore, it's the one aspect of it is that I would like to learn more about this. So, and I think a game is a pretty cool way to do this, because I'm ashamed to admit that I don't know much about like Finnish like mythology. I know some like we have some kind of creature, we have like tontus and stuff, but I don't know much of it. So I think it would be really cool to for someone to like do the research for me and put it into a game, and then I experience the game and then learn through that. So
By the way, do you think that games can be an educational tool? Can they teach us something? Obviously, they can teach us about ourselves and so on. But in terms of like a pedagogical tool, can they be used?
I think absolutely. But I think it's also kind of difficult to make it, to combine the kind of the, let's say, traditionally fun aspects of the game. Like it's fun to like jump around or like build stuff or like, I don't know, shoot or stuff. But how do you combine that with like, let's say again, like traditional... I don't know, you have this textbook, and you have to convert it into a game, and it doesn't work that you have this, like, let's say you're like playing this Mario game, and then you have a huge wall of text. I don't think we have seen that many good examples of that. I think there's lots of potential there. You could absolutely do that, but how, that's kind of, it's a challenge. So
it would, the learning experience would have to be incorporated into the mechanics of the game itself. Otherwise, it's like you said, it's a wall of text.
I think there's also like a difference between like making education game for kids and then like games that can teach stuff to adults too. So like this with this Year Walk game. So I didn't know that I was interested in Swedish folk tales, but then I played this game, and it was actually the folk aspects were... they were involved in the mechanics and the story and stuff. But then there was also this encyclopedia kind of thing that you could go and read if you want to. So I played the game and kind of, hey, I'm interested in this. I think this was interesting. And then I could check it out. Like, so that's one thing that you can do pretty easily. Just like add an optional, like this codex or something. So
So moving on from this game to the next, where do we stop next?
Yeah, we're coming to the present day, and maybe I would like to talk about Alien Isolation.
Absolutely.
And I believe you have played it.
It's the best horror game I've ever played. It's amazing.
Okay, cool. So I think we can see like aspects of especially Amnesia in there. So it's about it's a first person like a adventure style game. And it's played with the darkness and you being not being able to destroy the monster. You can defend yourself in Alien Isolation. You have some kind of, but you're always on the run, so to say. And both the environment and the alien is, and there's androids and stuff. Everything is against you, and you have to kind of survive, but not in the way that you have to kill everything. So I think that's kind of, let's say, like a big budget realization of the same thing that Frictional did with Amnesia.
Yeah.
And for me, the coolest part of Alien Isolation is how they recreated the feel of the movies, which is really, really hard to do. Because I haven't seen all the Alien sequels, and I don't want to because I've heard that they're pretty bad. But let's say especially the first movie, second is good too. But like especially the first one's such a cool like design wise and atmosphere wise and stuff, and they like. I think they do a pretty amazing recreation of that in the game. Like, even with the stuff that they don't have the modern gadgets, it's everything is kind of 70s style, with even every screen is like this VHS quality crap and stuff. Exactly. And I think it's like an audiovisual, like a masterpiece. So
it is. And there's an incredible sense of space. You can feel the emptiness of the station around you. How did they create that? What do you think?
I've read some interviews and stuff, but I don't remember quite right now, but I think they like did a huge amount of like, of course they watched the Alien movies like a thousand times, and they had access to like background materials and designs and stuff, so they really, let's say, did their homework with that stuff. And even with the I talked about the VHS screens, like the video bad video quality and stuff, so I understand that they actually took some like VCR these tape machines and ran the computer imagery through them to get. So my understanding is that they just put the work into it.
Yeah.
Like, but they also had the budget. Like, so it's about with like Frictional. I think it's like, I don't know, five guys or something. Like, it's a small studio. So, but with the Alien Isolation, there was like, I don't think like big budget is always a good thing. Actually, I think otherwise, but sometimes it works to the advantage of the game or movie or whatever.
Yeah, and the name of the game perfectly captures what the game does so well is the isolation. Like I remember the when I played the game, it was such a, and I think this is why I responded to the game so strongly. It's because I'm a kind of an emotional person. You know, I need an emotional connection with a character. I'm not so interested in visuals or something like that. And it was such a lonely experience, you know. It was such a lonely road from the beginning to the end. And then the only sort of people that you, well, there are other people there, but they usually die off and so on. But then at one point, I remember I came across one of those robots that looked like human beings. And I was so happy to see it. Oh, my God, there's another person here. And then it just, it speaks to you in this mechanical voice. Yeah. It tells you to obey and do what it tells you. Yeah. It's such a lonely, sort of sad experience.
Yeah, and I think loneliness is a huge part of horror stories in general and in gaming too. So we, if you look back at the games that we talked about, like I know all of the games are about being alone in some sense. Like either you are alone, the only person alive in a dangerous situation, or you are the only one who can do something about it. So I think that loneliness is a very central part of the horror experience. Yeah. Like even in something like, I don't know, The Walking Dead, like you usually have a group of people there, but it's like a group of people amid a sea of zombies. Yeah. So there's some part of the aspect there too. But I think you're right. The isolation is a really good name for it and the central core of the experience too.
Yeah. And I think in terms of horror, what makes a game or a movie scary is that sense of, you know, there's nobody to reason with. There's nobody to talk to.
Yes.
There's nobody you can say, no, look, stop this. Stop. We can all get along. They won't listen to you. And you're just forced to survive the experience. And that's one thing that Alien did so well. And some good zombie games do well. There's a person there, but it's a robot or a zombie. Mm. You can't reason with it. It's just there to kill you.
Yeah. The part of the appeal is that the... like if you talk about games, the game designers have created a situation for you, like these circumstances, like this thing is fucked up, this thing is fucked up, this thing is fucked up, and then they just throw you into that, and you're like, oh my God, how am I going to survive this? And when you survive that, you get that huge satisfaction. So I think that's and talking about like surviving and stuff, I wanted to mention this. We don't maybe need to go into that much detail about this game, but this Finnish game called Pollen, it was released like a couple of years ago. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe a year or two. So it's very similar to Alien Isolation, that you're on a space station and you kind of explore it and stuff. Yeah. But there's no danger there. There's no alien or stuff. Yeah. There's just something bad has happened and the crew has disappeared and you kind of explore it. But there's no combat or anything like that. Yeah. But I think it's not like a super horror experience, but there are like parts of the horror. There's some like... it's kind of unnerving, let's say that. You're kind of going around this empty space, like alone again. Yeah. And it's kind of feels, even if you know that there's no zombies or monsters around, it's kind of, it feels strange and not so cool. So I think that's kind of a game that not many have like played. So I wanted to throw it out.
Yeah, there. Definitely. In terms of this alien creature, it was designed originally by H.R. Giger, the Dutch sculptor. And there's something about the monster that has it has survived over the years. It's still scary.
Yes.
You know, if you look at these movies, some horror films from the 80s, it's just the antagonist is not scary, but the alien is still scary. Why do you think it is?
I agree with you completely, but I don't know if I can answer that because there's just something, I think the designer, I think, is it pronounced Geiger? Or?
I think it's Giger.
Okay, perhaps. Giger. Well, whatever. Well, he had like a talent for creating something that is kind of recognizable. Maybe there's parts of something human there, but it's something completely alien, otherworldly. So it's kind of combination of it's something that it's hard to look at. Well, you see an alien. It's kind of like a part human, part like maybe animal, like it has this like arms and legs and a tail and something, and that's something we can understand, but then it's also like this absolutely ferocious violence, mindless, it's kind of insect-like, it's like a huge insect or something. So that's like, it's like a combination that doesn't quite fit into the human mind somehow, I think. So that's kind of, they hit that balance again.
Exactly. There's something of a shark there, but then it's also like a praying mantis or an ant or something like
Yeah.
that. And it's like it's the perfect organism to kill you. It's
Yes.
just there to kill you and go on with its day.
Yeah.
One of the things that comment of yours brought to mind was the idea of exploring through this Finnish game, exploring a station where something has happened. I've noticed this in actually a couple of games that I played recently. One was called Firewatch.
Yeah.
And the other one was one where a house was empty.
Gone home.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they were both sort of about, you know, finding out something that had already happened.
Yes.
Is this theme like, did I just happen to play these two games? Or are there more games like this?
There are definitely more games like this. And there's been like a trend, like starting in something like, I don't know, maybe 2011, 12, something like that. So maybe a past, like, I don't know, six years or something. So there's been this, like, these games coming out. They're usually kind of short and focused on the exploration, the story aspect. And actually, like, A Gone Home was a significant influence on the Poland game. So it was like A Gone Home in space. It's very similar, but it has this tense atmosphere. Yeah. But actually, Gone Home has some tense moments, too.
Yeah.
There's like this... it wants you to think that there are horror aspects,
exactly.
But there are not, but it's still parts of that. So I think that's kind of, when we started talking about the Resident Evils and stuff, there's always, in the 90s, you had to have like a combat in a game.
Yeah.
And nowadays, you can have even a horror game without combat and even an enemy. So I think that's kind of, you can see the evolution of the games. We can have different experiences.
Yeah.
Like we can do this really action-based horror games. That works. We can do horror games without any action at all. And we can do something like Alien Isolation, which is like part adventure, part stealth, part I don't know what, like... escaping evasion game. So I think we have this nowadays, we have this huge range to choose from.
Yeah,
but I actually wanted to quickly comment on the stuff that you explore something that has already happened, and that's a I think that's a long tradition in gaming too, which goes back to at least this game called System Shock, which was released in 1994, which is about exploring like this space station where there's this AI that has gone wild and it has killed everyone and stuff. But actually really funny, if you know the development story, like it kind of looks like Doom. So it's kind of 3D, but really like this early 90s style 3D.
Yeah.
But they wanted to have like NPCs, like other people that you can interact with and stuff, but they didn't have the technology to do that. Like you would meet a person and it would look like nothing. And so it was a design choice to kill everybody on the space station because they didn't have the technology to make like believable human beings.
Yeah.
So I think, and then you like investigate what has happened.
Yeah.
So I think that has influenced a lot of gaming. Even now we can do like people who are believable, but then we rely on the tradition that started earlier.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Alien Isolation, is that are we at the pinnacle? Are we at the end? Or is there yet one more after that you would mention?
I will mention one game like shortly. It's a game that came out last year in 2016. It's called Inside. And I want to mention it because it's we have talked about games that are really kind of like adventure action hybrids or something. And this is like a platformer game with puzzle elements, which is not usually thought of as a horror genre.
Yeah.
But it's like this, it's again, you can die in it, but then you can like try again. So that's not a huge part of it, the survival aspect. But it's like not being understand what is happening. So there's like this, it's like a dystopian world. Kind of, there's like a suggestion of mind control and people like not being themselves and stuff, but it's all told throughout with no words. It's all visual and you have to parse the story together yourself. And I think that adds to the, you don't know what is happening. Even if you're playing like a game with platforming and jumping, it still feels very tense and very like, well, I don't know if scary, but like, you know that things aren't right. So I think that's a cool example that you can do horror, kind of horror in a different genre. So I wanted to just mention that too.
Okay, who made this? What studio?
I think it's a Danish studio called Playdead. So I know we are again in like Scandinavia.
Yeah,
so I think there's something like, there's like horror stuff made here. So
yeah, these are really interesting games. So I want to go back a few years. We talked about horror games, but in terms of games that have given me incredible anxiety and fear and nightmares, was a game called The Last of Us.
Yeah.
It's such a sad game. And again, there's the loneliness and despair. And it manages to evoke these feelings of of empathy for game characters. That was totally new for me. Was this game seminal? Was it important in terms of game development in general?
I think it's kind of, it was a huge game when it came out. It was kind of really well received and sold really well, and it was like a very big release. And I think it's kind of hard to say, like, on the influence front or stuff. I think it's kind of the studio that made it. I think it was Naughty Dog, if I'm not mistaken. Or was it? Well, I don't remember, but it's kind of you could say an example of this, like, again, like this big budget thing, like how you do this really cinematic experience, which really, like, plays with the player's emotions and stuff and takes you on a wild ride. So I think that's kind of something that we couldn't do in the, like, early 90s. And it's not necessarily always better. Like, it's like the 90s horror games, they have their own, like, positives. They have more, like, player control and stuff, but, like, a game like The Last of Us, it can be a huge, like, emotional, like, emotional story and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantastic game. And also, in your book, you mentioned this game that was really interesting. I'd never heard of it. Even though sometimes when I work, I feel like the game was made from my working life. Papers, Please.
Yes.
Tell us about this game.
Yes, I think you should really try it out. It's a very, very interesting game. It's a game, it came out in like 2013 or something. It's been mostly made by one person, so it's kind of the vision of one person. And in it you play like this border control person. You sit in this like office and then people come up and then they show you their passports and papers and they want to go over the border to come into your country. And then you have to check that everything is in order and you have to do it really fast, like you're like the clock is ticking constantly. And the point is that like it becomes increasingly difficult as you play it. Like every day there's like new regulations. Like, hey, you don't just have to check the passport. You have to check this. They have this certificate. And then you have to fill out this form. And then you're always battling against the clock. And what happens there is the mechanics of the game, they kind of present you the theme of the game, which is also like losing the human quality. Like at first when you start, it's you're very, very like... you concentrate on your task. You want to do the right job. You want to allow the people to pass and stuff. But then you have to like earn a living, and it depends on how fast you can process the papers and stuff. And it all becomes like you lose all the human like experience. So it kind of the people, they lose their individuality, and it becomes this huge mess that you have to just take care of that so that you could get money, your salary and stuff. And there's lots of like small stories woven into it, and so. I don't know, I recommend everyone to play it. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, this is a game that Franz Kafka would have made.
Yes.
It's like the people who programmed it, I'm not a mind reader, but I would suspect that they were huge Kafka fans because his novels were all about how bureaucracy swallows up the heart and makes you into a robot.
Yes, and so on. Exactly. I think that's a,
Finally, I want to ask you about movies and games because it seems like it's more of a rule than an exception that when a movie is made of a game or a game is made of a movie, it's not very good.
Yes.
Are there exceptions to the rule? Let's start with good films based on games.
Good films. I don't actually think I've seen that many. I can come up with like there's like a Resident Evil movie which I think I've seen and which was I vaguely remember it being quite bad because Resident Evil plots are awful. I think there's a movie of Silent Hill which is maybe kind of okay, but it was too much. It's been too many years. I think there were some aspects that were captured, the atmosphere or something, but then it also kind of became all this cult stuff and stuff. I don't know. I didn't find it that interesting. So I don't think I can kind of come up with movies based on games. The other way around, I think there's kind of many, but... well, you could say Alien Isolation is one. It's not based on any movie in particular. But it's actually a good example because in the first Alien movie, you had the one alien and you couldn't really like fight against it. You had to like evade and stuff. And it was, I think Alien Isolation is a recreation of that same like story or theme. Like you are alone with this one thing and you're like this, it's a game long battle, not battle, but it's this... power struggle, maybe. I could say that is a kind of...
Okay, any other examples?
mm-hmm. I'm sure there are some, but I don't know. I can't come up with anything
right now. Yeah, I can't come up with either. Usually, like this, if you think about classic films like Halloween or Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street, the games are not very good.
I think there's like, the first one that come up to mind are something like from the 90s when we had like something like GoldenEye shooter on Nintendo 64 and something maybe like, I don't know, even like Disney platformers, which were okay, but I don't think like, let's say like relevant, like contemporary, I'm not quite sure, but I'm sure there are at least more than there are good movies based on games.
Yeah. Yes. And finally, my traditional questions that I ask all my interviewers.
Okay.
Your top three games.
My top three games. I would say one is The Witness that I talked about earlier. Is this like a masterpiece of game design? Then I would say, maybe I could cheat a little, I could say the Mass Effect trilogy, because I don't think you can really separate those games, but any of those, it's about like this creating a new universe, really, like a sci-fi universe, which you explore, and it's about dialogue and story, and I think that's a really cool narrative emotional experience. So The Witness, Mass Effect, and three... maybe I could pick like a really classic choice. I could say Doom, because that's kind of, it's not the like the best game ever made or not the most important anymore or anything, but it's kind of, it's really cool what they did with the technology that they had at the time. And I think it's really fun, for me at least, to play even now. So I think that's kind of, it's not, it's a game, it's not really about anything. It's a really stupid game, but it's kind of, it has a cool design too.
Yeah.
So I think I could say those three.
Okay. And your top three books?
My top three books? Like fiction or non-fiction?
Any book that comes to mind.
This is hard. Well, maybe I'll mention some that have struck with me in the last couple of years. Could say maybe, well, something by Nietzsche. Actually, that's I think that's a weird thing to say nowadays. He has a really weird reputation, but I really love when he writes about art and stuff. He's a really beautiful writer. It's not only about slave morality and stuff. It's like his writings on life and art and stuff. So maybe something by Nietzsche. Then something that struck a chord. I read Michel de Montaigne's essays. And that was cool to read because they were written like the 15th century, 16th, and it was like really like, it felt like they were really fresh, and they were like blog posts almost. He was like musing on everything and taking citations and stuff, and he was just really like a fun guy to be around with for like a thousand pages, which was an achievement. And maybe third, I would say Tove Jansson's Moomin Valley in November, or what's it called, like Muumilaakson marrasku, which is I think that's a story that can be read at almost any age, and it gives something to everyone, and it's like this really sweet but really melancholic and really I don't know, life affirming. It's like a perfect fiction book to me. So
yeah. Your top three movies.
Top three movies. I'd say one of them would be Stalker, by Tarkovsky. Yeah, so that's a huge thing for me. And let's say My Neighbor Totoro, which is again
it's an animation, isn't it?
Yeah
that's right.
Yeah, so I think that captures the like the childhood experience really well, like what's it like to be a kid, and just not being about the plot but about the how wonderful life is and strange and all that. And let's say third, well, this one comes to mind, so I'll say David Lynch. I've loved always, so maybe Mulholland Drive. It's my Lynch favorite, so I think that's kind of... everything comes together in that film, so I think that's kind of cool. So maybe I'll go with those.
Okay, great movies, good books, good games.
Okay, thanks.
Where can people go if they want to know more about your work and discover what you've written? Where can they go?
I think you could... if you finish, I recommend... picking up the Pelit magazine, which is a cool magazine. So you could check out my book, which is called Kaikkien aikojen Pelit, or you could check me out on Twitter, which is just like Google my name, it comes up. So
Those. Do you have a website?
Yeah, I have. It's like armansos.com. So
okay, are you planning on writing anything in English at some point?
It's not out of the discussion, but it's maybe more like a payment issue or something. Yeah. So I don't know how to, like, I do some writing for money and doing some writing like just for my interests and stuff. Yeah. But I'm maybe someday.
Okay, yeah. I'll be sure to let my readers know when you do that. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.